Okay, thank you, Pastor Greg. Welcome to our eighth session in our summer series, The Bible and Science. I have a picture on the slide here of a mountainous region in northern China with a particular rock formation. And I'm going to make an argument regarding the origin of that rock formation. And I want you to criticize my argument based upon what you see in this picture, not, oh, I know the history or something like that. What you see in this picture only, you may use that information to criticize my argument. Now, my argument is perhaps there's something inherent in the nature of rocks that causes them to line up this way. And they do it by chance. Or maybe it just happened by chance. I know it's unusual and it goes on for many miles and all that stuff. But I'm going to argue that it just happened by chance. Unusual, but by chance. Or there's another interesting theory. And that's that during the Ice Age, it scraped the ice advancing to the south, scraped these rocks. And then when it left these lines of rocks. That's an interesting theory that's being worked on. We don't really understand how it came about, but some naturalistic means must have given rise to this formation of stones. Now, we have a new cordless mic, and Pastor Ward is going to come around. And if anyone would like to make a comment, criticize my argument based upon what you see in this picture, please do that. Okay, this is Mike Kowalk.
Why would it have a defensive structure to it, a strategic value like that, and why would it have, like, walkways for people?
We haven't figured that out yet. maybe, you know what, I don't want to divert us too much, but I'm thinking ancient aliens. Look, so... Mike is saying it has a certain structure and a purpose to it. Dr. Lam.
How does he know those are defensive structures and a walkway for a person?
I'm sorry, I missed.
How did he know that that's a defensive structure and a walkway for a person?
Well, it could be. What I'm seeing in terms of a defensive structure, does anyone else want to make a comment on Stacy?
I want to know how the windows got there by chance.
Ah, windows. Yes, Mary. Dr. Mary Lamb, right here.
I think it looks like it had a designer.
Ah, it looks like it had a designer. Well, we must constantly keep in mind that what we see was not created, but evolved. Okay? Anyone else want to make a comment? Way in the back. Bob. Oops, sorry. I got to get a new guy with a mic, you know. He's it.
I'm concerned about the fact that there's a lot of apparent straight lines in that structure, that natural structure, which usually doesn't occur in nature.
You mean right here,
straight lines, angles, things of that nature, which you don't normally see in natural formations.
Right. Anybody else want to make a comment?
How did they all fit together so perfectly?
It must be something in the nature of rocks that did that. Okay. Well, I'm being a little foolish here, right? My argument that this would happen by chance is really kind of foolish because it has a purpose. I mean, like Stacy said, you don't get windows by ice scraping rocks or rocks happen to falling around. You don't get a little tower like Mike says here on the top where, you know, look at these little places where someone could look out, maybe shoot and be somewhat protected. Notice there are steps here. You don't get steps naturally. On one side of the wall, there are these little places where you can shoot out. On the other side, no. So they're expecting an attack from the left. You can look out at the top here, see what's coming. And Bob says straight lines and right angles. I'm not aware in nature of any straight lines. If you see a straight line, right off you think, well, wait a minute, how did that come about? We don't have straight lines in nature that I know about. I could be wrong on that, but I've never known of one. And here we have straight lines and right angles. This obviously is design. And it goes on for thousands of miles. So are we going to say that rocks form a great wall by chance? Or are we going to say someone built the Great Wall? To argue that this happened by chance is silly. Okay? And I've just shown you that. So even though you didn't see the people building this wall, do you believe that someone built it? Yeah, I mean, to argue otherwise is ridiculous. So we can believe in someone we've never seen based upon the evidence that they left behind. Now, atoms. There are five atoms that compose DNA. That's the double helix. We have two helical frameworks going around the side here like this, in that one. And those are composed of phosphate and deoxyribose. Make those two chains. And you can see between the two helical chains, there are little steps. And those are nucleotide base pairs. One there, one there, one there, one there. In the human genome, there are 3 billion of those steps. That is a structure that I would argue is of equal complexity to the Great Wall. I mean, the Great Wall is incredible when you think of all the stones laid and mortar between them and all. Well, look at those little steps. Atoms, there's nothing inherent in the nature of atoms that would cause them to form this structure. So when we look at this structure, when scientists look at this structure, oh, this probably came about by chance. Well, then the Great Wall could come about by chance. This has an incredible structure to it, not anything inherent in the nature of the atoms or the way they might come together. So it's not by chance, and there are two reasons in DNA. One of them is, I'm saying, the structure. The structure is incredibly complex. There is no way to explain how atoms could get together like that by chance. There's something else here, though, that's even more impossible. I mean, if this is impossible, the next thing I'm going to show you, I would say, is even more impossible. It's doubly impossible for DNA to come about by chance. There is in the DNA a genetic code. This is not just random nucleotides somehow getting together in a long polymer string. There is an order to those nucleotides in that string. This is a nucleotide right here, and then it's paired with this one. This one is paired with that, this one, another. So we have all of these nucleotides going down. And as we've said before, when you get 3 nucleotides together, a triplet set of bases in DNA, that can code for an amino acid. So we get 1 amino acid coded for there. The next 3 will code for the next amino acid in the chain. And the next 3 for the next amino acid, et cetera, et cetera. That goes on. And that's how we get from DNA to a specific order of amino acids in a protein. So the order in which these bases occur in the DNA is not random. It might look random. And anything can go anywhere for chemically, but the pieces are put together and must be put together in a very specific order if it's going to function as a gene. So we have the genetic code in there as well. It's not just a long string. It has a certain order of bases that are required, or it's useless if the bases aren't in the right order. So DNA requires structure and a genetic code. And Dr. Crick saw this and made the comment that I quoted a few minutes ago, that we must constantly keep in mind that what we see was not created but evolved. Why do we have to keep that constantly in mind? Because it screams creation, just like the Great Wall says someone made this. It's not a random pile of stones. This says someone made it. Now, I'm going to read you some headline news about science today. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made. Dr. Wald saw that. He saw the complexity of DNA, and what did he say? Because of our bias, because we cannot accept a transcendent source, we choose to believe the impossible, that life arose spontaneously by chance. So he knew it. He saw God's eternal power and divine nature in general revelation. That's what we see in general revelation, the invisible attributes of God. So they are without excuse because they saw it. For even though they knew God, they knew there must be a God behind it. We know there must be some human builders behind the Great Wall. When we look at DNA, which we've been able to do now in the last 50 years, we know that there is a structure and a complexity and even a code there. And that speaks of some sort of intelligent agency at the very least. Now, we know who the agent is because he gave us more than general revelation. He gave us special revelation, which I'm reading to you here. For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Now, that's the sad part, that these brilliant men see this, and they should say, okay, there's a God, there's got to be a God. But they can't do it because they're biased against that. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Now, a couple of footnotes here. General revelation, God's power and nature give rise to what? Complexity, design, beauty, usefulness. All of these things we saw in the Great Wall. You know, that's obviously something that was created by intelligent beings, design engineers, whatever. Futile in their speculations, for example, directed panspermia. What evidence is there for that, that life was transmitted to Earth from intelligent beings on some other planet? That's what directed panspermia is. There's no evidence. That's simply a speculation based on no evidence to try to salvage materialistic worldview, which just doesn't work. It doesn't explain things. Okay. This series will present practical lessons about how scientific discoveries affirm the eternal truths of God's word. That's what the little handout said, and here it is. Okay? I got it. I did it. Okay. We could go home there, right? But I got a few more things to say. Now, first of all, the homework. Some people believe the universe is 15 to 20 billion years old. How many seconds in 20 billion years? Extra credit. Express your final answer in scientific notation. I know not everyone did their homework, okay? I know that. Someone I love very much didn't do the homework. She didn't think it was, I don't know. Anyway, not to mention any names, right? But let's see. Dr. Gingrey, did you do your math homework? I always wanted to say that. Okay. All right. I know he did the math homework. He asked me some questions about it. I hadn't even thought of that. Okay. The answer. 60 seconds per minute, 60 minutes per hour, 24 hours per day, 365 days per year, 20 billion years. 20 billion is a big number. I mean, how many seconds in 20 billion years? I mean, that's kind of almost a ridiculous question. Who could figure it out? There must be just like almost an infinite number of seconds in 20 billion years. Well, let's look at the number and see. Now, in math, I did this for the math teachers here. You know, if you have something upstairs and downstairs, they cancel out, right? So we'll cancel them out. Day, day, year, year. And hopefully we're going to be left with what? Seconds, because we want to get the answer in seconds. There it is. So just do the multiplication, and you get 630,000,000, period, point. And who wants to look at numbers like that or count the zeros, right? We don't count the zeros. I mean, who has time for that? So see that decimal point? We're going to move that over and put it between the 6 and the 3. So we'll call it 6.3. We want to get a number somewhere between 1 and up to 10. So 6.3 fits in that range. Now, we've moved the decimal point over how many places? 17. If we've moved the decimal point over 17, we can't just do that. We've got to make up for it somehow. So we're going to say 10 to the 17th. 10 to the 17th. For some reason, 17 doesn't sound really big to me. But it means we're multiplying 10 times 10 times 10 times 10, 17 times. That gets pretty big. Let me ask a question. What if we talked about, whoops, wrong button. Okay, I want to talk about 100 times this. What is 100 times 6.3 times 10 to the 17th? We're just adding two more tens, right? 10 times 10, that's 100. So all we got to do is add 2 to the exponent. So we go from 17 to 19. Big deal. Well, wait a minute, that's 100. That's 100 times. That's 2 trillion years. If we want to hang around for 2 trillion years, we can say now there are 6.3 times 10 to the 19th seconds. Not a big, doesn't sound very big. The reason I gave this homework, not because it was fun, but because I wanted you to get an idea of how big these numbers get and how fast they get big. Now, we're going to be talking about numbers that make 10 to the 19th or 10 to the 20th seem like child's play. It'd be nothing, okay? But it's big. It's gigantic. The number of seconds in 20 billion years? Yeah, okay. 6.3 times 10 to the 17th. Now, universal probability bound. Is there a point where the probability of something happening, like all of those rocks, just if we throw rocks up in the air, they're going to come down on the Great Wall, how many times would we have to do it before they do that? Is there a point where the probability of something happening is so small that we could say it could reasonably be attributed to chance? Let's see, that little magic circle says yes, there is a point. Okay, some proposed probability bounds. 1 in 10 to the 20, Richard Dawkins said that. And he was speculating on the possible number, how did that happen? The possible number of planets in the universe that might be compatible with life. Because obviously, if you got all of these molecules in the universe trying to make life, okay, they're all trying to do it. If this happens in the sun, for instance, our sun, trying to make life, it's not going to work. It's too hot there, especially in the summer, right? I was looking at, I don't know the temperature of the sun, so I Googled temperature of the sun. 15 million degrees on the inside, only a few thousand on the outside. You're not going to get life there. Someone had proposed 10 to the 50, 10 to the 100 has been proposed. How about 10 to the 150? A one with 150 zeros at. That's one I'm going to take. Because there's some reasons for it that I kind of like, that appeal to me. And no one could argue with 10 to the 150 that I haven't given chance enough chance. We've got to give chance a little more chance than that. And it takes into account these things that I'm not going to go into in this class. If someone wants to talk to me about that, I kind of like that stuff, so we could talk about it. The probabilistic resources, okay? All of the things that could happen in the universe cannot render possible any event whose probability of occurrence is less than the probability bound. For instance, if something, say, well, the chance of that happening is 1 in 10 to the 200. Well, no, that could never happen. We're going to say that it's not reasonable to say that that could happen. If it was 1 in 10 to the 151, we're going to say no, that couldn't happen. Now, how will we use the probability bound? We'll be looking at the probability of certain things happening in biology. If anything has a probability of happening less than 1 in 10 to the 50. It cannot be attributed to chance, regardless of how much time you give it. The probability bound already takes into account all time that we could reasonably be thinking of. For instance, the probability of the first life, the first cell arising by chance, was estimated by Fred Hoyle, an astronomer, British astronomer, to be 1 in 10 to the 40,000th. Now, my particular calculation of that's way too low. That's not impossible enough that it could be that. But still, where is that? Where's 150? 10 to the 150 in 10 to the 40,000. It's nowhere. If you count it up, let's count up that high. Okay, I got to 10 to the 150 now. Am I there? No. You haven't even started. So this is an incredible number, and I think it's low. Now, Dr. Crick was aware of it, and he said almost a miracle. Dr. Wald was aware of it. These are committed atheists. These guys are just atheists through and through. That's what they've chosen. That's the road they've chosen to go on. And when they see this sort of thing, Dr. Wall said it's impossible that life could have arisen by chance. But we're going to believe it anyway because we can't accept that there is a God behind it. I mean, he said it that clearly. So how big is 1 in 10 to the 150? Is it fair? Are we being fair to chance, or are we cutting it off too early? I think Dr. Dawkins, who is the arch atheist of our age, cut it off at 1 in 10 to the 20. That's pretty low. But it's still a big number. We know that from the number of seconds that we calculated a few minutes ago. How big is 10 to the 150? Would it allow the selection of one atom in the known universe? And there are about 10 to the 80 atoms in the known universe. I'm going to go around secretly somewhere in this universe and choose an atom. Is it possible that chance could maybe get that same atom? Easy, if our cutoff is 10 to the 150. Because 10 to the 80, I mean, that's nothing compared to 10 to the 150. If we had 10 to the 70 universes, which is an impossible, crazy number, we can't conceive of it. If we had that many universes, and I went somewhere in all those universes and picked out one atom, I'll tell you which one it is. Could chance get that atom? Yes. If our probability bound is 10 to the 150. So are we being fair to chance? Yeah, we're being more than fair to chance. Reductionism. Does the whole reduce to the sum of its parts? Somehow can we explain the Great Wall coming about by chance, by reducing it to rocks and some property of rocks? Do the properties of the parts explain the structure and organization of the whole? Now, materialism has to say yes, because that's all they have. The total must be reducible to its parts without any intelligent intervention. Examples. If you're digging in the silver mine and you find all these little silver nuggets, and then you come up with this silver spoon, you dig it and there's a silver spoon. Wow, look at this nugget. It almost looks like a spoon. No, it is a spoon. Someone made it. Silver doesn't do that. There's nothing in the property of the atom silver that would cause it to form a spoon. If you see a spoon, you say, wow, someone dropped a spoon in here. Stick this in my pocket. Okay? So that cannot be reduced to the properties of silver. If you see that, you know someone made it. To argue otherwise would be silly. Okay, water becomes ice. It's a very complex structure of water becoming ice because it froze. Now, when you see that, do you say, wow, someone must have gone in there and carved all those little icicles and everything? Or is that reducible to the properties of water freezing? Yeah. We don't look at that and say, wow, someone must have done that. You look at that and say, well, yeah, that's pretty interesting. That's the way water freezes. You know, it was wet at one time, it dripped down there, then froze overnight or whatever. So we don't attribute that to chance. We can't attribute this to natural causes and chance, of course. Now, I'm going to show you another example of water becoming ice. Okay? There's water turning to ice. Now, when you see this water becoming ice, what do you say? Wow, isn't that interesting, the way that just happened to form a motorcycle? It almost looks like someone carved it. No. When you see that, you imply intelligent agency. Why? Because it's complex. It has a certain order to it. And it doesn't happen by chance. It's far too complex. Okay. Is there any way to identify the activity of God in nature, in creation? Is it an objective scientific way? Now, we often say, as I've said a few times in the past in this course, we could look at the eye, for instance, and say, wow, isn't that amazing? It has all this part, that, the lens and retina and whatever. Isn't this amazing? How could that have happened by chance? God must have done it. Yes, I agree with that. That is an emotional approach, and I think there's some validity to it. I'm a scientist. I'm not supposed to be emotional, right? There is an objective way, a scientific way. What if we had a detector that could identify God's activity in nature? And we could just point and say, see, that's God at work. An overview of today's lesson. Okay, now I'm getting to today's lesson. I want to talk about codes, significance of a code, and where does a code come from? And the probability of something arising by chance. Can we get to impossible in biology, that it could not reasonably be attributed to chance? Now, you've already seen the problem. You know where I'm going with this. The probability of life arising by chance, 1 in 10 to the 40,000. Well, yes, of course, we're going to get to impossibility very easy on, even though we've given chance every possibility that it could possibly want and more. We're going to find that there are things that are impossible in biology. Does anyone recognize this? If you turn on your shortwave radio and you hear what do you think? It's SOS, right? Now, SOS is an acronym for Save Our Souls. And it means help, our lives are in danger. Is there any inherent relationship between and help, our lives are in danger? No. That has to be defined. Okay? That only comes from intelligent agencies. Someone, Samuel Morse, making up a code. Okay? If I say dot, 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 I'm going to let that be an S, dash, dash, dash. I'll let that be an O. And it does the whole alphabet. But there is no relationship, inherent relationship, between dot, 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 and S. That's just a definition. The code can't be reduced to its interpretation. It's something that's defined. And that doesn't happen naturally in nature. That only happens by intelligent agency. The only known source of a code is an intelligent agent. Is God necessary to explain what we see in nature? Are there any codes in nature? You saw this slide a month or so back. This is the genetic code. And I talked about it on the first slide. We take three nucleotide bases, and they'll be coding for a particular enzyme. And another one would code for a different enzyme. If we have a point mutation, you know, the genome, before it can make a baby, it has to copy the genome, and then it divides in two, and you have two daughter cells now with the genome. So the genome has to be copied. There's a possibility there could be a typo. It's rare, but there could be. If we have one typo, one base, say an A here, rather than being copied as an A, becomes a C. To put a C in there by mistake. Well, what happens? Glutamine, now, in that protein is going to be changed to proline. As you know, very well from previous lessons, the sequence of amino acids in the protein is critical for the shape of the protein, which is critical for the function of the protein. So we can't just mess around with the nucleotides in DNA without potentially causing a problem in the protein. And that would be a point mutation. So there are codes. What is it that causes CAG to code for glutamine? What is it that causes dot, dot, dot to be S? There has to be, in biology, of course, we don't just have someone, well, we do have someone defining what it's going to be, but we know the mechanism that he set up to do it. There's about 150 different enzymes involved, very specific, and transfer RNA and a number of other things, ribosomes, that all have to be in place and are all extremely complex to interpret that code. That code just doesn't pop out. We need all these enzymes, extremely complex, to interpret the code. Okay. Here's the part. Get away from there. Okay. Complexity and specificity. I want to talk about these two concepts for a moment. It's really very simple. I'm going to show you a couple pictures. Here's a pile of bricks. Maybe there are, say, 2,000 bricks there. Is it complex? You didn't see that little one come up there a minute ago. Is it complex? Just a random pile. I mean, a truck could have dumped that there, right? Is that complex? Well, let me help you. That's 2,000 bricks. I'm going to give you another 2,000, and I want you to make a pile just like that one. I want every one of those 2,000 bricks to be in the same relationship to every other brick in that pile. Now, let me ask the question. Is it complex? Yeah, it's complex, right? Who would want to do that? That's very complex. It would take a while to do it. Now, is it specified? Does it say anything? Does it do anything? Does it have any meaning? Does it have a little tower where guys can look out and maybe shoot or something like that? Is it specified? No, that's a random pile. It's not specified. So it's complex, but not specified. Just like the icicles we saw. They're complex, but they're not specified. If it's complex, that doesn't mean someone did it. If it's complex and specified, that's a little bit different. For instance, here's another set of bricks. Is it complex? Well, yeah, look at there. You know, it's very complex. How about is it specified? Does it do anything? Does it have any meaning? Does it show anything? Is there mortar between the bricks? Are they in straight lines? Look, straight lines, straight lines. We don't find that in nature. And obviously, it's a wall. And there, for a purpose, it has a doorway in it. We don't typically find doorways in nature. So it is specified. It is complex and specified. Now, if I were to argue to you, no, this is just a random set of bricks that just happened to fall in place like that with a mortar between them and all that stuff. And isn't it nice that it gave a little doorway going into the next garden and even some stairs? That would be ridiculous. Someone made this. Okay, how about this? Is it complex? Let me help you again. I want you to make a scale model of this. You can make it 1/10 if you want to. Every nook, every cranny, every little piece, every little crack, I want the same in the model that's in this one. Is it complex? Yeah, it's complex. Is it specified? Do we look at that and say, wow, look, someone must have gone up there and carved all of those little nooks and crannies? No, that's just a random erosion. So that's not specified. How about this one? Is it complex? Yeah, that's very complex. Is it specified? Yes. It is specified because we recognize those faces. Well, even if you don't know who they are, you see, wait a minute, those are human faces. I see four human faces on that. How does that happen? And look at all of these little telltale chips down here. That's kind of interesting. So that is complex, and it is specified. It has a meaning. Do we attribute that to erosion? No. Someone did that. When you see complexity and specificity, it's done. It is done by some intelligent agent. Most things in biology are both complex and specified. Most things in biology. I'm trying to think. Well, there are some simple molecules and all, like some of the amino acids or whatever that are relatively simple, and maybe we could get those. You know, just like you could throw bricks up in the air and maybe two or three will fall down. Aha, we have the foundation of how a wall could form by chance. No, you just got a couple of bricks laying on top of each other. That's all. Not complex enough to be considered something that was formed by an intelligent agent. So what is the source of complex specified intelligent, complex specified entities? There's intelligence and there's no other known source. So our intelligent detector is complex specified information is a sign of intelligent activity or intelligent agency. Is what is the relevance of CSI to the Bible and science? It constitutes an objective, scientific way to detect God operating in nature. If we see things in biology that are both complex and specified, we know someone did it.